We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hey, what is up, everybody? Welcome to the Guilty as Charged podcast, coming to you live on a Tuesday evening. My name is Steven, and I am the host, as always, and joining me is my guy, Tyler. Ty, what's up, man? How are you doing tonight?
Terrified of Ben Herbert. That's all I'm doing. How are you?
I'm doing good, man. I did not listen to the entire thing of his, but I was not expecting a 30-minute press conference from Ben Herbert. If you want to know what kind of say he has in the organization, I've never seen a strength conditioning coach or I guess director of sports performance have a press conference, let alone a 30-minute press conference on the first day of voluntary workouts. So we have officially reached Ben Herbert season. If you have not watched the press conference, I would definitely go encourage you to do that. If you're lacking any kind of motivation, he will pull that out of you just from the press conference.
Yeah, I've heard of, you know, people will watch a video and say like, oh, I'm ready to run through a brick wall. But like, I think Ben Herbert actually makes you run through brick walls as a part of your training to not be fat as well. I certainly was listening to that press conference and poking my belly at the same time.
Yeah, you're not even out of shape, so don't even worry.
Oh yeah.
but you know, it's interesting because like everybody kind of knows like exercise, right? And like, you know, you don't get this kind of insight into, you know, ankle flexion and neck density or whatever the technical terms are. I'm sure I'm butchering that, but it was just cool to see, man. And the fact that they are literally putting so much attention to detail into everything that they are training for these athletes, for the Chargers, I think it is going to be a huge, huge advantage for them going forward. And it's obviously why Jim Harbaugh wanted him to come over with him from Michigan.
Yeah, 100%. The attention to detail, I think, is fantastic, as well as the part where he discussed like the emotional aspect and being like emotionally resilient. I think that's really important for the Chargers. Really, any, you know, edge you can get, sure, in the fourth quarter, we need that. But I think the Chargers in particular, not that the Chargers were not like emotionally resilient before, but I think emphasizing that is so good, because when you've got to beat the best teams and you're in the fourth quarter, do you shy away from that greatness or do you go get it? I think with Ben Herbert, they're going to do that. I don't know if the team will be any good, but they'll be fit and they'll be strong.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it speaks to that development. You know, Tyler and I were on the Locked On podcast earlier this morning. If you missed that, please go check it out. Show them some love. One of the things we talked about with David Drogemeyer was player development. And I think this is a key thing why the Chargers went after Ben Herbert. I mean, like, We talked previously about, you know, Chris Jenkins and how he was like the mutant of all mutants, which ended up, he tested like fine, but not great. But like, he was a 3-star prospect. He wasn't like somebody who was supposed to be a second round draft pick. And it's a lot of credit towards what Ben Herbert and his staff have done. So, you know, the Chargers, obviously, it's NFL athletes, right? Most of them are high-end athletes, but you look at, you know, what he could potentially unlock out of a freak athlete like a Zion Johnson or a Quentin mm-hmm. Johnston or Derwin James or any of these guys, you know, Khalil Mack, like all these guys. You know, Khalil's probably not the best example because he's already, you know, in his late stages of his career, I should say. So it just is, it's going to be fun to watch the influence of Ben Herbert and, you know, especially once they get into the new facility and he's able to like just deck that thing out to everything that he possibly could want. So it's an exciting thing to pay attention to, that we really, like, every team has a strength and conditioning staff, but it's like, like what effect does it have? Well, now we're going to know because Ben Herbert's going to tell us.
I'm fascinated, and God bless the first, you know, anonymous profile on Twitter to criticize the strength and conditioning staff, you know, because I think with Chargers fans do that every year and kind of rightfully so given the what's been occurring, but who's going to tell him he's doing it wrong? I'm not going to be the first one to do it. That's for sure. You talk about like Michigan, you know, you watch like Alabama, you watch Georgia offensive lines. They're the biggest, fastest, meanest dudes that they could have found every year. Look at the Alabama offensive line. They're the biggest dudes. Yeah. Michigan, maybe they are, maybe they aren't, but they've never been like, you know, a bunch of 5-star recruits. Like we've talked about before, it's a bunch of 3-star recruits. And yet this is a team, the Michigan football team has won the Outland Trophy. You know, sorry, they had an interior offensive lineman last year win the Outland Trophy for best interior offensive lineman in college football. And then 2 years in a row, they won the Joe Moore Award for best offensive line in college football. Like what they're going to do with, like you said, a Zion Johnson. I mean, Rashawn Slater, like his video famously is him doing the front squat. Can he do more? You know, what else is there? Like, what is Rashawn Slater but maximize? You know, I'm so excited to see it. I'm so fascinated to see how Justin Herbert responds to this too, because I think he's just that kind of individual who's like, this is what I need. I just need someone to yell at me, tell me what to do, and just like just trust everything. I'm excited. I'm excited.
Yeah, and we've heard Justin's, but he's a kind of a workout warrior himself, you know, lifting with the offensive line from time to time. So that should be fun to see as well. All right, we'll get to our main topic of the day. Today's show obviously is presented by our friends over at PrizePicks. Go use the link prizepicks.com/guilty for a deposit match up to $100. Again, that's prizepicks.com/guilty. Today we are talking potential and potential risk of the 2024 draft class. So this is an idea we wanted to dive into to kind of talk about players who maybe are not checking every single box and why that is the case. So we're talking about lack of tape. We're talking about data. We're talking about injury history. We're talking about one hit wonders, all the stuff. This is all the players that we are covering tonight. There is going to be a part two of this series where we're going to be talking about the highest floor potential prospects in the 2024 draft class. So if you want to talk about guys who might present a higher ceiling, you're worth taking a risk on, that's today's show. Probably next week, we're going to do our higher floor, safer prospect show to kind of wrap this part up. So this is, again, we're trying to cover this draft in a unique way. This was Tyler's idea. I love the idea. I think this allows us to talk about a lot of different prospects who might be fits for where the Chargers are picking. So I'm really excited to dive into this. And Tyler has really put a lot of work into this. And hopefully that shows up today.
Yeah, I'm excited too. It's just a little bit of a different way for us to, as I mentioned in the chat, like show our work. You and I spend so much time doing this. We try not to repeat the same names and the same mocks. Even though we're kind of guilty of that. But of course, like we like certain players. Let's try to dive into this class a little bit more. And honestly, we're going to talk about some favorites on here among Chargers fans. And like, oh, I didn't know that about this player. I didn't know he had that injury. Oh, I really like this player. He fumbled how many times? How many drops does he have? What's his missed tackle rate? He's only played 1 year or 500. Like, we're going to get into so much today. And I think it's just good. It makes a more well-rounded discussion for us. And the Guiltiest Charge listeners always get, you know, the best from us. So here's a bunch of nerdy stuff, and I can't wait to dive in.
Yeah, we've said this before, but Tyler and I always try and watch at least 3 games of all 22 of these players, but that doesn't tell the whole story either, you know? And so we're just trying to show as much of the prospect as you can get. Like, there is a prospect on here where I watched 3 games. I didn't see any of the statistical issues that we're going to talk about. And then you look at the stats, you're like, oh, that's kind of an issue. So this is going to be maybe some souring for some of you guys on some of the players, but
yeah,
also like it does show too, like the potential that is there with some of these guys as well. So I'm excited to dive into that.
And it's also, it's not a, we think this player stinks. Like we love a lot of these players. It's nothing like, it's kind of a factual thing. Like here's some of the risk associated. Like we can't just ignore medicals or drops, et cetera. So yeah, let's dive right in with the riskiest players in the 2024 NFL draft. Started with a different one, the not making the all hands team. This is a bit of a drop rate, fumble, contested catch rate issue. We are going to highlight some guys as we go along. So here's kind of just the list, and then we'll have more focused profiles for some of these guys. But some of the names that popped up while doing some research were Troy Franklin, not a surprise. Marshawn Lloyd, a big favorite among Chargers fans. Jamari Thrash, Rasheen Ali, and Braylon Allen.
Yeah, I think you look at the numbers here just for our audio audience. Troy Franklin, the wide receiver from Oregon. You know, I think there's some of draft media that love Troy Franklin. I'm not there personally. I think he is, you know, kind of in that Jalen Hyatt vein. And if you like that player, great. Like that's, this is a guy who has made a killing of the Pac-12 of getting over the top, being a speed threat. But you look at the drop percentage, it's a 10% drop percentage and only a 36.8 contested catch percentage. And both of those things showed up at the combine. He struggled in, I forget, the gauntlet drill. And then he also struggled in the contested catch drill. So those are areas of a concern. So if you really love the idea of drafting Troy Franklin, and I can understand why, you have to also understand that this is not a guy that you're going to be able to throw the contested catch situations up. There's going to be some drop issues. This is not just from last season that it was a problem. It was a problem the previous years at Oregon as well. So he's a guy, if the Chargers don't take a wide receiver in the first round, a lot of people are talking about him at 37, and you got to talk about this drop rate and the contested catch rate being pretty low.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, so we'll get into some of the spotlights here. So you talked about Troy Franklin. I wanted to discuss him in particular because Chargers are potentially looking at the actual, you know, possibility of taking a wide receiver in the second round and him potentially falling to them at 37. This is a guy who's kind of teetered around like that late 20s, 30s range for teams. But then his draft stock has kind of plummeted because of stuff they saw at the combine and more study. And it was a strange thing for me with Troy Franklin because I watched him immediately and went, okay, there's that. Okay, here's the grade. There's the drop issues and the contested catch issues and kind of a lack of speed. I didn't think he'd test super well. And then he was like, okay, first round grade, or everyone's going to put him in the first round. And then he went to the combine and everyone's like, oh, he has drop issues and contested catch issues. I'm like, I don't know what you guys were watching because I felt like that was pretty apparent this whole time. And of course, you can always just check the statistics. So yeah, big stock down from the combine. We struggled to find anyone for a stock down at the combine, but Troy Franklin was an easy one. And then of course, Marshawn Lloyd here. I like to be nasty and put up a reference number for you guys. So he has 8 fumbles and 289 rushing attempts, which is once every 36 snaps. For reference, Austin Eckler last year fumbled once every 36 snaps as well. So, and this, unlike someone like Braylon Allen, who I think you wanted to talk about, Marshawn Lloyd's fumbling was on tape for me. The issues were there. I forget what game it was, but I'm watching like, oh, that was almost a fumble. Or I think he got away with a catch, but he didn't actually like maintain possession during the catch, throughout the catch, and make a football move.
That was against Utah, yeah.
Yeah, so they counted it as a drop, but that's kind of like a fumble. So yeah. This has been all over. So everyone's going, Marshawn Lloyd, really popular fourth round pick, and I get it, and I totally am down for it. And we've selected him before. But if you watched Austin Eckler last year and you were really unhappy with those fumbles, Lloyd fumbles the same rate. Now, this is over many years in college football. Things could change, but if you're trying to break ties, remember this one.
Yeah, I think, you know, drop rate and fumble rate, I think it's going to be interesting to see how those translate. I do feel like drop rate is something that usually translates in the next level. Unfortunately, that was an issue with Quentin Johnston, and we saw that last year as a rookie. Fumbles, it can be kind of fluky. It can be something that prospects are able to correct. It can be a coaching thing. Of course, the Chargers did hire USC's running back coach to be their running backs coach. So, you know, it can be something that could be corrected, but we all watched Melvin Gordon have fumbling issues for the first 4 years of his career. And that was still a thing into the Broncos and with the Chiefs and with the Ravens and everything like that. So sometimes these prospects are able to correct these issues in terms of fumbling. Unfortunately for drop rate, I think it is something that is not as correctable. The contested catch thing, that is something, if the guy has the physical attributes to go and do it, you can work on it. Romo Odunze had, I think, like a 40% contested catch rate in 2022. And then this past season, it was like 85%. And he worked on it. He trained for it. He has the physical attributes to do that. That's not Troy Franklin's game. You know, Troy Franklin's not a big X jump ball wide receiver. So some of it is physical attributes. Some of it is coaching. Some of it is just like the player or the prospect working on it, as Kevin Koenig points out in the chat. Maybe he was just trying to do too much. Maybe he just needs to realize, like, hey, like, I got 3 yards after contact. I don't need a fourth. I can just kind of like go down here. So I feel better about Marshawn Lloyd being able to correct this than I do Troy Franklin being able to correct his drop issues.
Yeah, I would agree. Regarding contested catch, that's not something I put a ton of stock into, but it does, it almost kind of works at the extremes. If you're a very tall or bigger receiver and you're supposed to be this X of the future, if you don't come up with those, that's a knock. If you're a smaller receiver, I think like Calvin Austin, for example, or even like Marvin Mims, and you are better in that category, that's a plus. But overall, like, I don't pay too much attention to that one, because sometimes a contested catch is, you know, a fade, pretty well thrown one, but it's contested, or it's an awful ball where you got wide open and then someone underthrows Xavier Worthy and he's got to come back and get it, and it's a contested catch. So it is a bit different there, but drop rate, I agree, that is very, unfortunately, it feels like it correlates right to the NFL. And we just saw that with Quentin Johnson. Our exact same problems with him, one of the main problems, went right to the NFL and didn't change. So will that change with Harbaugh, and could that change with Ben Herbert? Sure. Lloyd, again, I feel better about. It's not like it's 7-8 fumbles. I think we just discussed, like, Rasheen Ali had 12 fumbles in two seasons, which is not great. But yeah, I think Marshawn Lloyd, it's not the worst thing ever, but it is like a bit of a tiebreaker. If it's like between, well, he didn't test well, but Irving and Lloyd, if I had the same grade on them, I'd have Irving above him.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think also getting back to this, I do want to bring up the Braylon Allen thing. So Braylon Allen had 9 fumbles on 596 attempts. So more attempts than Marshawn Lloyd. Marshawn Lloyd had 289 attempts. So you're talking about nearly, you know, over 300 more for Braylon Allen. But specifically in 2023, he had 4. So again, that's the player that I didn't see the fumbles on tape. I saw the Marshawn Lloyd fumbles on tape. So it's just picking the right game sometimes.
Totally.
How did the fumbles make you feel about Braylon Allen? Is that something where it's just kind of the volume, or do you think that's a legitimate concern?
It's a great question. I have not watched him yet, so I do not know.
Okay.
I'm watching day 3 centers, baby. So I've not watched Braylon Allen yet.
Yes. And the center class continues to get deeper and deeper. So love it. I am kind of concerned about the fumbling issue for Braylon Allen, but not to the point where I would like lower him by any means. The thing with Marshawn Lloyd, I'm going to have to like go back and consider, because that is, you know, very frequent fumbling. 9 fumbles and 596 attempts is not that much of a deal breaker for me.
Yeah, I would agree there. It is certainly better than the almost the same number of fumbles in 289. Yeah. I believe for Allen, it was 8 rushing fumbles and then 1 receiving fumble. Mm-hmm. So maybe it's, we missed, I don't know. Again, it is based on what you watch and who you watch, right? You guys can look good in some games. Some games are just available, some aren't. If we watched YouTube, maybe we could see more games, but we don't. So we don't. Want to get into the fun list?
Medical concerns. Unfortunately, there's quite a bit of notable ones this year. Laiatu Latu famously had to medically retire from the University of Washington. He had the neck fusion surgery a few years ago. UCLA did clear him. He's played the last 2 seasons. We haven't heard anything from the combine checkups, but some of that doesn't get leaked necessarily. So if you start to see Laiatu Latu fall in the draft, this is probably why. Jonathan Brooks tore his ACL on November 11th. He did not test at the NFL combine. His camp says that he is going to be ready for the season. But really the concern, I think, with the ACL is sometimes it takes guys a full year to like actually get back to their former athleticism and burst and things like that. So that's something to consider because of the recency. Khalid McKinstry, another recent one, has to have the Jones fracture surgery, which we talked about previously. I think the plan for him is also to be ready for the season. But again, we just did the JC Jackson thing. You never really know how these guys react to the surgery. And then I'll let you do this the second row here. But Peyton Wilson, the injury history is extensive for Peyton Wilson, the linebacker from North Carolina State. Yeah. He has two ACL tears. He has a season-ending shoulder injury and surgery as well. This is a guy who's older prospect. He's had a bunch of injuries, so he plays a physical position. So it is something to consider for Peyton Wilson. I think for me personally, that was a big deal in kind of breaking the tie between him and Edgerrin Cooper, the linebacker from Texas A&M.
Yeah, I would agree. The second row here, Eric Aull, the tight end from Iowa / formerly of Michigan, back surgery and the ACL tear. We'll get into that in a bit. Trey Benson famously had an awful injury that tore basically everything humanly possible. Now, it's a bit different than Brooks. He went out, he tested, he had an elite RAS. I'm not as worried there because he actually went out.
That was in 2021.
Yeah, that was a ways ago. Yeah, so for him to have that kind of showing, I'm less worried, but it is something to consider. Amarius Mims, I accidentally put Kool-Aid's same thing, the same injury there. It's not the same thing, but Mims does have an extensive injury history, tightrope surgery, and plenty of in and out of games. I mean, you look at the 2023 stats, and I don't know how many games he even played and finished, I should say. And then Blake Corum, of course, his knee injury required meniscus surgery. That was, you know, that's the talking point. Is Blake Corum going to improve? Is he not? I don't know, but that's a big discussion point. Blake Corum does pop up a few times on this list, unfortunately. But that is just kind of the case with his profile. And again, he's Harbaugh guy, Chargers fans, some of them want him. So got to talk about it. You talked about Peyton Wilson, high school tore his ACL, 2021 tore his ACL. Then he had a season-ending shoulder injury in week two. You know, some of these guys, like there's bumps and bruises. They miss a game, they miss two games, whatever. But some of these guys, it just flat out is season-ending for Peyton Wilson to have three separate ones. Yeah. That's basically a deal breaker for me, definitely in the second round.
Yeah, I think the film shows that he's kind of recovered from that, but you know, he's a guy you probably have to take at pick number 37 for the Chargers. And you know, you're ideally getting somebody in the second round who can be on the team for multiple contracts, you know, as we've discussed, you know, Joe Ortiz is going to want to draft and keep this core intact from the players that he takes. So ideally your second round pick is on the team for at least six seasons. And I like, this kind of medical history, it just kind of paints a picture of some concerning career length, if you will.
Yeah, definitely. Another one that really bums me out is Eric Aull, the tight end from Iowa, because watching him at Michigan in his first really productive season, you could tell like there was a plan for him. He was going to be one of the next better receiving tight ends for Michigan. Not like the blocker like Schoonmaker was, for example, or Barner is this year. Like he was a receiving threat. And it's hilarious to watch 2021 Michigan film and see Mike Sanders still catch passes and touchdowns in that game. It was really, really weird. But still, like watching what he could do in 2021 and even in 2023, a lot there to like. Like you are a Harbaugh guy and then you go to tight end U in Iowa. So there's something there. But unfortunately, had a back injury, that a season ending back injury that required surgery his last year at Michigan. Then he gets and transfers to Iowa and then has an ACL tear. So he's pretty far down the boards. I want to say like in somewhere between close to 300, I think. And having two very back-to-back injuries, very serious injuries, is not great.
Yeah, I think this is a guy you can kind of do the whole like Hunter Kantmoyer thing, although maybe you might have to draft him, stash him on the practice squad, let him recover. You know, maybe this is kind of a guy that you are essentially given a redshirt year. You know, the Ravens did trade back into the draft a few years ago to take Andrew Voorhees after he tore his ACL at the combine. And so maybe that's kind of the same path for him with Eric Aull, and you kind of just take a redshirt season and you take the chance to see if you can develop him for the long haul.
Yeah. I don't think he'd start on this team, but like he would, I think if he returns to form, get there. So yeah, I could see them stashing him.
All right, statistical scares here. You mentioned Blake Corum again. Tyler puts together a list of composite rankings for every single position based off of various per-play stats. You can talk about that process if you'd like. Blake Corum is the worst composite ranking in the running back class. That's not a surprise if you follow Arjun, if you follow Hayden Winks, or if you follow anybody on Twitter who talks about these kind of things. the data profile for Blake Corum is not pretty. It's also not pretty for Adonijah Mitchell, who has a lot of statistical concerns about him as well. Theo Johnson, who is kind of somebody who teams are considering as kind of maybe a tight end three, tight end four. Jordan Reed has him in the top 45, I think, of his particular board. You know, yards per route run, yak per reception, it's all very poor. Andrew Phillips, who Dane Brugler is a big fan of, is the worst composite ranking in the cornerback class. And then similar to Adonijah Mitchell, Keon Coleman's data profile is very poor as well.
Yeah, I just saw someone screenshot the reception perception profile for Keon Coleman, and they basically said it was the next Quentin Johnston. And they're kind of going to go in the same range potentially, although I didn't think Quentin Johnston would go that early based on everything else. But yeah, when you're being dubbed the next Quentin Johnston, it's not great. Some people will definitely attribute that to the quarterback and the quarterback play. I get that, but it was rough. Like if you, this is someone I'm supposed to be like ahead of Brian Thomas Jr. I mean, they were thinking like Keon Coleman was just the other guy with Odunze. And, you know, oh my gosh, I can't remember his name. Malik Nabers. Holy cow. and he's so far away from that now based on film. And then just the statistics do not help him there either. But the one to talk about, I think, is Adonijah Mitchell, because I was going back through and trying to find his yards per route run. This is weeks or even months ago when I put this together, and he was so far down. I went back and I'm looking like with his yards per route run, you know, how early do these guys get drafted, or who are the guys in the same range as him? So I went back through like 2023, 2022, 2021, 2020. And you look at all the receivers about his yards per route run, and there's like not a single name you even recognize as being drafted. It's not like there were other bad projected day three receivers in that range. Like I didn't even recognize the names that he was around. And per Arjun, Adonijah Mitchell averaged 1.08 yards per route run versus man coverage in particular this past year. Since 2018, there have been 70 wide receivers drafted within the first 100 picks, and only one player had a lower yards per route run in man coverage in their final year of college, and that is Deebo Samuel. Now, some people will cling to that and say, he's Deebo Samuel. He's not Deebo Samuel. I do like him quite a bit, but this is the risk. It's a very much so an outlier in yards per route run, and whereas that is the best shot most of us can get to projecting to the NFL in terms of a stat, right? Puka Nacua led the league, led college football in that stat last year. Malik Nabers leads him in that stat this year. It was Devontae Smith before, et cetera. To be that low and that much of an outlier is worrisome.
Yeah, I think there's a lot to like in terms of the positive attributes, in terms of his athletic traits, and the body control is outstanding. His ability in contested catch situations is fantastic. His ability to create separation at the top of the route is really well. But the statistical outlier here is really hard to ignore. I mean, this is a guy who did not have a 1,000-yard season last year at Texas, despite being in a very pass-heavy offense. He only had 9 catches in 2022. I think that was due to an injury, that was at Georgia. So he only played 1 year at Texas this past year. And if you look at his like game log, it is like eerily similar to Quentin Johnston at TCU. You know, 26 yards against Rice, 78 against Alabama, 30 against Wyoming, 46 against Baylor, 141 against Kansas, 33 against Oklahoma, 14 against Houston, 59 against BYU, 149 against Kansas State, 61 against TCU, 32 against Iowa State, 35 against Texas Tech, 109 against Oklahoma State, and then 32 against Washington. Again, not all that is his fault. His quarterback was terrible. Like, I cannot emphasize enough that Quinn Ewers was awful to watch on tape. So it is kind of film versus stats. Like, that debate between him and Keon Coleman, I think, is really interesting. You know, we pride ourselves on being able to look at the entire picture. And Adonijah Mitchell checks the athletic traits. He checks the film, in my opinion. But this data profile does not usually lead itself to somebody who is going to be a future wide receiver one.
Yeah. And again, poor data, worrisome data does not mean bad prospect. Like,
right,
he's going to go in the first, let's say, 40 picks for sure. Like, I think him and probably
he's Coleman's not falling past 32. I feel pretty confident in saying that.
Right. So I think he'll be fine. And it ultimately depends on your quarterback situation, et cetera.
Yeah.
But again, tiebreakers here, there is risk there. You cannot tell me that there are 10 other receivers with the same kind of yards per route run profile that all succeeded, or even that half of them did, or even that three of them did, or even that two of them did. It's literally just Deebo Samuel since 2018. So definitely worrisome there. I guess hopefully it's a Deebo-like ad for somebody, although the profiles are very different there. Yeah. Boomer bust tape. I'm going to let you talk about the guy that we're going to talk about and feature in a bit. But Miles Cole, edge rusher from Texas Tech, he's a big physical, not physical, he's physically big. He's very athletic, but it's very boomer bust in the tape. Anaya Smith requires, I think, a bit of manufactured touches. Xavier Worthy, somebody pointed out earlier about Xavier Worthy and some concerns. Yeah, definitely some concerns there. Part of the boomer bust is definitely the quarterback, but it's also just the hands. The hands profile is not great either. Tavondre Sweat, I agree there as well. Definitely boomer bust there. And then Quinyon Mitchell is a very interesting one. I'm going to let you talk about him first, and then we'll kind of discuss Quinyon Mitchell there, because I get where you're coming from. So I just wanted to hear you explain Quinyon Mitchell.
Yeah, so, you know, Quinyon checks a lot of boxes. I want to start there. Like, I think there is a lot to like here. He is my fourth highest graded corner. You look at his data profile, and it's very, very good. He had the second highest coverage grade among all cornerbacks in the class. He was tied for third in forced incompletions. I think he was eighth in forced incompletion percentage. But I think, like, when you watch a guy who plays at a smaller school, and Toledo is not like Sioux Falls, right? Like, you want to see him be able to go up against top competition and see how he does in those kind of situations. And again, like, Marvin Harrison Jr. did this to everybody, but like, he really struggled to, you know, not allow separation against Marvin Harrison Jr. He struggled to make plays against Marvin Harrison Jr. And even the plays against Emeka Abuka as well, he was not super efficient in man coverage. So this is a guy who I think excels in zone coverage, but he does have the physical frame to kind of, you know, overcompensate that. But if you watch him against his top two games, which were Ohio State in 2022 and Illinois this past season, I think you see a lot of struggles there in man coverage, just from a physicality standpoint and a timing standpoint, an angle standpoint. Had a couple missed tackles in there as well that I was not a fan of. Some of these cornerbacks, including one we're going to talk about later, kind of just like throw their body at ball carriers sometimes. And Quinyon does that. That is a correctable issue. But when you're, again, kind of trying to break ties, when you're trying to compare players, you know, you watch a guy like Terron Arnold, you watch Cooper DeJean, you watch Nate Wiggins, they are sound tacklers. And Quinyon Mitchell, just in his biggest games, I didn't love the way that he showed up. Now, there's a ton of off coverage, and he is excellent in off coverage. He's excellent in phase coverage. This is a guy, if the Chargers were still doing the Gus Bradley scheme, like, he's a perfect cover three scheme. And when I watched him do cover three work, when I watched him do in phase work, he did remind me of Casey Hayward, just like the fluidity, the ability to come off at the right moments, play the football. The ball skills are outstanding. But in terms of the boomer bust tape, you're watching him be great against the MAC, and then you watch him against Ohio State and Illinois, and there's just some struggles there that I wish he would have been able to check that box. And Illinois doesn't even have like a high-end receiver. Like, getting, you know, losing reps against Marvin Harrison Jr. and Emeka Abuka, I can totally understand. Like, those are two great receivers, including one of the best prospects I've ever seen. But I just wish he would have checked those boxes against top competition. And, you know, he never really got to show his man coverage ability against the MAC, because they just play a ton of zone and he's great at that. But it just leads to a lot of questions of how he will hold up in the NFL. If he's the first cornerback taken in this draft and he goes to a man heavy scheme, I'm going to have a lot of concerns there about his ability to succeed in the NFL, just because he never really did that in the NFL. Everybody who was at the Senior Bowl said that he went down there and had a great week, was pressing, was physical. That was 1 week in a controlled environment where you're practicing. It's not a game where you're going up against these NFL wide receivers where there's every single team has a great wide receiver. So it's just the profile here is like, you watch his good games, you love it. You watch his poor games, and you're just like, I don't know how this translates to the NFL. So that's the reason kind of why I wanted to focus on him in this exercise.
I'm glad you did. I didn't think of him initially, although when you first mentioned him, I thought more of like the tackling issues. If you look at the missed tackle rate, it's not a huge issue. I think he only missed like a few tackles,
like three or four, yeah,
overall, but it's the way that these tackles occur. When you watch them on film, you know, you watch YouTube or you watch highlights or both, you don't really get to see that as much, but you watch things on film and how things play out, it's not pretty. And I think even like the Thunder Down Under podcast and Alistair pointed out like the way that Quinyon Mitchell was tackling, like, sure, the guy goes down, but you're diving like head first, spearing, yeah, trying to take out the legs, throwing your shoulder and your head first. And that's not really how things are going to go in the NFL if you want to be successful. Granted, it didn't really work in college either. So I think he's willing enough, but boom or bust in that regard. And then, yeah, in coverage, I would agree with you. I do like him quite a bit. He's the 13th player on my board right now. But that is very much so like a ceiling thing. Like,
yeah,
a ceiling discussion, because like if he hits, oh my God, you know. But and honestly, with him, watching him initially, I was the first game I watched, I'm like, there's no shot this is a top 10 player. Some people were hyping up as being like, you know, from wherever he was in the second round, and it was really fun to mock draft him in January to like, you know, top 10 player over Arnold and over McKinstry at the time was like, what is happening? Yeah. But the more I watch him, the more it's like, if this hits, in literally, but if he hits and if he pans out, it's one of the best players in this class. But again, a lot of question marks. Some of that boomer bust is definitely there. The question is, can you get to, well, the boom, not necessarily the bust.
Yeah. You know, corner is arguably the position that relies most on athleticism. And as it currently stands, before all the pro day stuff is input, he is the highest RAS cornerback in this class. So he's, you know, he's an athletic freak. The length, the size, it's all really fun. The ball skills and his ability in cover three to play the boundary, it's all really fun. It just, there are some question marks about his profile. And I think you could also do this about the rest of the cornerback class. Like Cooper DeJean has some question marks. Terron Arnold, I'm not oblivious to his question marks. You know, I think he's going to be mentioned here later. But it's just, this is kind of, if you hit on Quinyon Mitchell, then you could potentially get one of the best cornerbacks in the league. But if you draft him into a man coverage scheme and you don't hit on that, you're probably not going to get a ton of return on investment here.
Yeah, definitely. So he'll have some great moments in the NFL, but we'll see how that rookie season goes. If the Chargers have him as CB1, I'd get it, because you're like, hey, let's go for the ceiling.
Yeah.
But is he? I don't know. The next one was a little bit trickier for me to find some names, and we kind of struggled with some of these lists, but 1 year wonders, guys that, you know, produced and they were great in 2023. You look at the per play stats and they're awesome. The production is there and it's awesome. And then you look at the rest of their career and it's either, you know, maybe it could be some of these guys, you know, it's injuries. Some of it's, they didn't play this position. Some of them, it was a different school. They didn't have the playing time for whatever reason. These guys had a great final season, but there wasn't a whole lot else there. Just a great final season. So the names that we thought of, Xavier Leggett, the wide receiver from South Carolina, that's probably the more, I say famous one, but that one that Brett Coleman broke down. Jalen Polk, who we both really like. I think we both have as wide receiver 5 in this class, if I'm not mistaken. Terron Arnold, who we talked about. Jonah Ellis, the edge rusher from Utah, who I have not watched. And then Jackson Powers Johnson. We don't have him featured here, but like Jackson Powers Johnson, great year. Obviously, great tape in 2023. That's basically the only year he played center. And so it is the only year he really played center. So it's not like there's a lot to go off of there to project like, oh, he's a multi-year starter. It's great though. He is center one. I think he's IOL one overall. It's just kind of a 1 year thing.
Yeah. So Xavier Leggett, again, this is not to slander. This is just to kind of paint the picture why I think some of this prospect class obviously dealt with a lot of the COVID aspect of things. And that's certainly part of what happened with Xavier Leggett here. Obviously there's, you know, Bo Nix from the age standpoint, that's the other side of this coin. My college quarterback is going to be in college for 7 years because of COVID. So shout out to Cam Rising. But looking at Xavier Leggett here, you know, his senior year, he was a high school quarterback convert. This is according to Brett Coleman. He was a wide receiver. His offense switched to kind of like a triple option thing. So they put him at quarterback and he was the rushing quarterback. And the stats were, I think, great. And I think that shows up on his tape. He gray-shirted as a freshman in college, which if you don't know what that means, that's basically just like a more extreme red shirt. Like you do not practice, you only work out. It's like you are putting on weight, you are in the training facility, like you are basically like a triple A player, if you will, instead of like being on the team like a redshirt person. Then COVID hits, so he didn't really have a 2020. He was in a motorcycle accident in 2021, and then in 2023 he put up a huge season with Spencer Rattler and a terrible offensive line. A lot of hospital balls as well from Spencer Rattler. But you look at the data profile for 2023 and it's outstanding. The film is a ton of fun. The athletic profile is a lot of fun. But he was definitely a slow developing player due to a lot of different circumstances. But in this class, like you look at his physical profile and it does stand out as kind of against the middle of the pack group.
Yeah. In terms of the pro play stuff, he's fifth out of 36 among the receivers. You know, top 10 finishes in yards per route run, yards after the catch, drop rate, etc. So, like, again, 2023 looks great. I love Leggett. I think he's my wide receiver six right behind Polk. But yes, there is that 1 year sort of thing. I'm glad Brett Coleman brought all of this up and he found more about like his parents passing in two separate years and the motorcycle accident, etc. Like, you know, I do not have the time to do all this work for every prospect, but yes, Thomas Martinez, Rattler to Leggett. If he dies, he dies. And Xavier Leggett, man, like the plays where he goes up and gets it and bails out Rattler, like that's part of the reason I like him so much.
Yeah.
But yeah, so just one true year of high production.
Yeah, and I think it does show a lot about him as a person, as a character, you know, being able to, you know, overcome so many of those different circumstances. I mean, I haven't lost my parents yet, but I can't imagine like being a college student, losing both parents and then also trying to figure out my career and also trying to figure out where I stand in the world and like try and go play football on a weekly basis. So I think it shows a lot of resiliency, and for him to be able to, you know, go out there and play at such a high level in 2023, like, yeah, he's an older prospect, but you know, at the end of the day, like, you know, his athletic profile, I think is going to lend itself to having a pretty long career in the league. So it's just, you wish there were more seasons, but you obviously can look at the circumstances and the context and understand why and what led to him only having the one season.
And age, I'm curious what the new norm is for age average of some of these prospects, because now it feels like most of these guys feel like they're 23 or 24. Randomly, you'll get a Tuli Tuipulotu or a Malik Nabers who are 20 entering the draft. Otherwise, it feels like a lot of these guys are older anyway. So being a bit older, taking more time, like you look at some of these, you know, you look at like PFF and look at the season grades they have. It's a different school. It's not playing. It's an injury. There's 5-6 seasons. Like Josh Proctor, the Ohio State safety. I think he joined Ohio State in 2018 and now he's draft eligible. Like,
we're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Owning a small business can be overwhelming. How can your business stand out and connect with customers? Easy. Get Constant Contact. There's so many places to reach customers. Email, text messages, Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, live events, the list goes on. How are you, as the business owner, expected to own all of those channels? That's where Constant Contact comes in to help. With Constant Contact, you'll reach new audiences, grow your customer list, and communicate more effectively to sell more, raise more, and fast-track growth. I use this to grow my email list, and you should too. So get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Just go to ConstantContact.com right now. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall. ConstantContact.com.
which is an outlier still, but it's not as bad to have taken longer these days, I feel like, than it was maybe a few years ago.
Yeah. All right. Before we get to the next one here, we do have to pay the bills a little bit on the show from time to time. So Tyler, why don't you tell our friends about Prize Picks?
Oh yeah. Love Prize Picks. You get to pick 2 to 6 players and whether they're going to go more or less at really anything you can think of. There's even goblins to look at, like green goblins or red goblins. It's a ton of fun. It's so easy. My mom can figure it out and she's not great with technology. Sorry, mom. Love you. she's not watching the risky players drop one, are she? Is she? We've loved using Prize Picks though. Yeah. So you can jump on, make your selections, pick more, pick less, and it's pretty instant payout. Like, I love it. It's updated real time, ton of fun. So to make your selections, go to prizepicks.com/guilty and use the code guilty for a first deposit match up to $100.
Yeah, it's super easy to use. A lot of fun doing like the different crossover challenges from time to time as well. So definitely go check that out. It does really help support the show as well. Also have to tell you guys about Unified Health. We're really excited that they have decided to sponsor the show this year. And whether you are a listener, whether you are a strongman competition, I realize we have one of our listeners who competed in a strongman competition the last weekend. Placed 3rd. So shout out. Oh my gosh, I feel terrible now because I forget his name right now, but I want to say it's Bryson. Yeah, Bryson on Twitter. Shout out Bryson for doing that. Whether you're a strongman competitor, whether you're a podcaster, an educator, Unified Health is the best way to, you know, cover your bases in terms of the mental and physical well-being for proper recovery and top-notch performance. If you are interested in experiencing the new EE system technology for yourself, you can go to unifiedhealing.com/guilty to learn more and find a center near you. I'm pretty sure they're all over California. There's a couple here in Fresno. Again, that is unifiedhealing.com/guilty.
Yeah, Steven and I are big advocates of mental health, and things that really disturb my mental health are missed tackles on tape, in particular with corners. Very, very well done. I definitely do not love watching corners who do not tackle and they have poor missed tackle rates. Now, there is a difference. You have to watch the film. The difference between some people having a missed tackle rate that's high and some that's low kind of just depends. It's very much so it depends. You have to watch the film. Can't just judge based on statistics. Max Melton, I will take his missed tackle rate in the film over Quinyon Mitchell's lower missed tackle rate in that film. With that said, the missed tackle rates aren't great for some of these guys. TJ Tampa, 16.9% missed tackle rate. Max Melton, 26.7, which is not pretty. The Notre Dame linebacker, Maris Liufau, 18.9 missed tackle rate. Andrew Phillips, again, we talked about him being statistically not great. This one shows up for sure, 23.1 missed tackle rate. And then Tatum Bethune, the linebacker from Florida State, 17.6 missed tackle rate. Try to look for guys that were above that 15%. I believe JT Woods was 17.6 or 17.7 his final year. So that's kind of where we're hovering here. I'm sure I should have looked it up. The focus here for me is TJ Tampa, and that Texas game in particular was not pretty. There's missing tackles, and then there's like not really being close to getting there because of the angles, and also you miss the tackle. Granted, you know, Mitchell, Sanders, Worthy, you know, this is a very, very good offense, or at least the playmakers on offense are very difficult to stop and bring down. But watching that was not pretty. TJ Tampa was kind of like the other pick that Chargers fans would make routinely in the second round, maybe until recently where it feels like it's more sane still. Well, guys, I don't know. Based on the way that he was tackling, not a huge fan. It was not pretty. A huge knock on him for me.
Yeah, I think the missed tackle thing, again, it's pretty similar to the tape. Like, I think you could have put it – there's several other linebackers here, but specifically that you could have added. But just specifically with TJ Tampa, I'm trying to remember the corner who I'm thinking of right now. But there are some guys where it's just like you watch the tape, then you look at the numbers, and you're like, yes, this checks out. And the missed tackle stuff with TJ Tampa definitely checks out. And what's I guess disappointing for me is that he's billed as like this physical enforcer type of cornerback. Like, people describe him as somebody like a JC Horn, who I loved coming out. And yeah. JC Horn didn't have a great missed tackle percentage either. His was like in the 10% range though, but it was like, you take his style because he does play that way. I never really saw TJ Tampa be a physical enforcer type of corner. There's like one big hit on there against TCU, but you know, it's the technique, it's the business decision aspect of where he kind of lags behind a little bit. You mentioned Max Melton. Max Melton has a missed tackle rate that's pretty high because he is constantly trying to be in the play, and sometimes he misses. Like, that's fine. You take the intention. So unfortunately for TJ Tampa, it's the lack of intention and it's the lack of technique for me. So this is a player that I'm much lower on than the consensus is. Like, some people are hyping him up as like a top three, top four cornerback, and I just cannot get there.
No, I think, I don't know if this is a corner you were thinking of, but I think Andrew Booth had a same like missed tackle rate that wasn't great, but I feel like the way he played was very different. Was worried when I saw the stats, but it was better. Of course, that's a few drafts ago. Not that he's panned out in the NFL, but I don't think missed tackles.
That's an injury thing, though.
That's an injury thing, yeah. As Fitness points out, Terrion Arnold had 8 missed tackles. I don't remember what his exact number was, but again, you watch the film of it, and you are far less concerned. This is, honestly, my opinion, like maybe the best tackler, outside in terms of the outside corners in the class, certainly wants to be the enforcer. Him, Sain Ristil, like whatever the numbers are, and not that you should ignore them, but the tape, I think, stands out more to me than just the numbers.
Yeah, and Arnold only had one missed tackle against the run. So, you know, sometimes in passing plays that are deep down the field, you leap at a guy or whatever, you know. So that could be the case with Arnold. I'm 100% not concerned about Terry Arnold's tackling ability at all. I think you watch him tackle big running backs. I think you watch him tackle, you know, a guy like Blake Corum. Like, he's a guy that's going to come up and play the run. Like, that's one of his strengths. Mm-hmm. That's why, you know, he's a guy that we would love to see the Chargers draft so heavily. But TJ Tampa, just I can't get there. Like, it's when I see a cornerback who will not tackle and cannot tackle, it's a big red flag for me. And that's unfortunately how I look at TJ Tampa.
Yeah. On the flip side, not that everyone's going to be this good at tackling, but like Brian Branch, like, he very obviously was a great tackler, never missed a tackle. He did literally miss one. He made 400 other tackles, no problem. Yeah. Yeah. And that translated just fine. So again, we're trying to avoid risk sometimes. Guys like Brian Branch, who would have been on our highest floor episode last year if we had done one, aim for that. Yeah. Almost there, guys.
Last thing about that, the cornerback conversation specifically, we talked to Cody Alexander on the Chargers channel, and that was one thing that he definitely highlighted. He's like, if you are a cornerback who will not and cannot tackle, you cannot play for Jim Harbaugh and Jesse Minter. So unfortunately, like, that is a big, big deal for them.
Yeah, you watch Sanders still, you watch Josh Wallace, you watch Junior Colson. Everybody on defense stacks, sheds, gets out of the way of the blocking receiver, tight end, guard, whatever. Perfectly. The timing is wonderful. Arnold, same way with Alabama. You don't do that, you're not playing. And again, it is coachable. Like, clearly Michigan has something where they can coach and they have King scale. They have, you know, they can get at this all together, but you know, it's still risky. As far as barely played football goes, this category, you could kind of put like injuries in there as well, but it kind of made it its own thing. For me, this is like, you literally did not play much football at all. Yeah. And this is Amarius Mims. We'll talk about him in just a bit. Austin Booker, who has like 2 college seasons of playing, only 505 career snaps, and he's like a potential third round pick. A lot of potential there, don't get me wrong, but again, this is a risk video here. And then Trent Jones, threw him in there because he had 3 starts in 2023, yet he went out and played, you know, Iowa, Alabama, Washington. The starts are really good, but he only had those 3 starts. He's played a good number of snaps, but he's kind of the fill-in swing guy.
Yeah,
but only 3 actual starts in 2023. Amarius Mims, you want to talk about him?
Yeah, Amarius Mims is one of the strangest profiles I can ever remember of a guy who is part 1-year wonder, part physical athlete. Like, the film is so much fun to watch. Just seems like a guy who's playing like JV football out there against the SEC. But you look at his game log, and he, in 2023, he started and finished 4 football games. One of them was against Tennessee Martin. One of them was against Ball State. And then the other 2 were Tennessee and Georgia Tech. That was just in 2023. In 2022, he was kind of the backup, kind of filled in. He did start and finish against Ohio State, and that tape is a ton of fun to watch. Of any offensive tackle, going up against JT Tuimoloau from Ohio State. It's actually Amarius Mims who had like the best performance there, which is kind of crazy considering all the offensive tackles, who, including his other teammate Braxton Jones, Joe Alt, the right tackle Blake Fisher from Notre Dame, Olufoshanu, like all these guys going up against JT Tuimoloau, he kind of cooked them. Amarius Mims had the best performance there. So if you want potential, like you watch that one game against Ohio State and you're like, damn, man, like this looks pretty good. And you, it's just like comical how easy it is. But as it says here on the screen, 297 snaps in 2023, 803 snaps in three total seasons. Joe Alt is definitely kind of the Iron Man of this offensive tackle class. He played 713 snaps in 2023 alone. So you're talking about barely more than a full season of snaps for Amarius Mims across three different years. So some of that is role, right? Because Georgia is stacked, but there's an injury history here. There's a real like lack of development here. But that being said, man, like if Amarius Mims gets to the right situation, like if he goes to the Eagles, he's going to be the best offensive tackle in this class because the potential is right there. You just have to get him in the right coaching system, right offensive line environment. Yeah. And if you do, you can hit on it. But if you're a team like the Saints at 14 who do not have that offensive line environment and you take Amarius Mims, unfortunately, I think you're going to get a very similar return of investment as a Trevor Penning type situation.
Right, who I wanted to avoid for sure. Penning played a lot. He just also, you know, was penalized a lot. It was bad. It wasn't great, that's for sure. The Chargers last year should have no business drafting Amarius Mims. I could see the Chargers doing it this year with the trade back because of the potential. Again, like we've all discussed, everyone's heard this. Like Mims' potential is the highest maybe of any player in this class, it feels like. Maybe not so, but yeah, like, pretty close to it. Like this guy could be it. Goes to the wrong team, not going to be so pretty. Goes to the Raiders, yeah, you know, well, thanks, I guess. Like, you know, that'll be good.
Yeah, he's a guy like you develop by playing, right? But like, I think he is a guy who probably needs to sit for a year. And so if he goes to the Raiders, if he goes to the Saints and has to play right away, like there's going to be a steep, steep learning curve for him as an NFL player. And then also like the injury concern. So I think he just needs some time to kind of really like develop physically and then be able to, you know, start for a team in 2025. If that's the Chargers, like I think they really need to have starting players come out of round one, but you know, he could sit for a year behind Trey Pipkins and Rashawn Slater. You get him with Ben Herbert. Like, that's some real, real potential there. But like I mentioned, like I don't think the Chargers have the luxury of taking a redshirt player, essentially.
Yeah, I agree. This is, I'm out on Mims for the Chargers. I get why they do it, but I'm out on him for several reasons, including what we just talked about, what you just mentioned. A last one for us are physical outliers. There's a few for sure, but there's some names you came up with. Braden Fisk with the arms, Johnny Wilson, almost in kind of a good but bad way. He's very tall. Not that he's heavy, but he's a really, really big receiver.
He was bigger than their actual tight end at Florida State.
He's a big guy, but that makes him a physical outlier. Anthony Gold, very opposite, 7th percentile height at 5'8", 10th percentile weight. Not great. Mostly the height's not as much of an issue for someone with his skill set and what he does, but the weight potentially. Blake Corum, 10th percentile height, 43rd percentile weight. Again, just not the worst thing, but another thing to be added on. Because he is 5'7", and as I mentioned, he is shorter than me, which is not many people. just kidding, there's a lot of people, but my entire agent's out of the family. Nate Wiggins is the other one here, and the one we'll feature here. Nate Wiggins is awesome. The film was awesome. I just watched Matt Lee, the center from Miami, and by way of watching that game, I watched him against Clemson, and Clemson with the, Nate Wiggins is flying down the field with his speed and forcing that fumble. I think they recovered it. I don't remember, but
the fact that the one where he fumbled it out of the end zone. Yeah.
Like 60 yards away, flying also into camera view is Nate Wiggins. He is awesome to watch. I would take him at 11 if the Chargers traded back. Like, I get why they would. He's also 173 pounds. And for reference, Asante Samuel Jr. is 180. And just because, and I had to bring it up, Travis Benjamin is 172 pounds. If you remember Travis Benjamin in a Chargers uniform or a Browns uniform or a 49ers uniform, not the biggest guy in terms of meat on the bone. and Wiggins is about the same in terms of weight. So does it make him a bad prospect? No. Was it a problem in college? Not one bit. He can move really, really well, but it is an outlier. Again, a sixth percentile in weight for corners.
Yeah, I think obviously last year the Commanders took Emmanuel Forbes ahead of Christian Gonzalez, which I almost always forget. But Emmanuel Forbes like was lighter than this. I think Emmanuel Forbes is like 166. But he had amazing ball skills and man coverage ability was fantastic, and that's why he was drafted. But he was never really like a physical guy. Nate Wiggins is like, you watch him. There's a play against South Carolina where he is kind of in off coverage and he comes up and lays a really, really nasty hit on Xavier Leggett. Again, another hospital ball from Spencer Rattler. He's got a couple other plays where he's really able to demonstrate that he is a physical sound tackler, which is part of the reason why I really like him. He's my CB2 overall, but there are teams who are going to look at a corner who weighs this much and say, hey, you know what? Like we're not going to have him ahead of Cooper DeJean, ahead of Kool-Aid McKinstry because Quinyon Mitchell, because of that weight. Like it does matter that this guy is 173 pounds, six percentile weight. And the thing is like, you don't really want a cornerback to like try to beef up because speed is so important and he is super, super fast. He got injured at the combine. Otherwise, I think he probably would have been able to run in the high 4.2s, low 4.3s, which I think he ended up being like mid 4.3s. But this is a guy whose speed is like paramount. And so you don't want him to like gain 7 pounds and be 180. But at the same time, it's like if he could get up to 180, that would really help his physical profile.
Just hydrate, I guess. Stay hydrated. thanks to Denzel Perryman.
Yeah.
Again, on tape, not a problem, but just makes him an outlier.
Yep. All right. Hopefully you guys enjoyed that one. That was a lot of work. 58 minutes here tonight. So did not think that was gonna be the case. But I always like go into my like we do the prep for these episodes. I'm like, oh, like this will be easy, 45 minutes, and then here we are 58 minutes later.
Yeah, well, if we did surface level, sure, we'd be done in 20 minutes, like no problem. We could just move through this, no problem, list off some names in the first round and call it a day. I mean, we're talking Trent Jones, the 300th player on the consensus board and his three starts.
Yeah.
Miles Cole, who's like 400th on PFF's board. You know, we're getting into the nitty gritty here, but I'm happy to spend a lot of time on this because I think our fans, and I do honestly enjoy this because it's just a little bit more for your discussion and really you're trying to be as correct as possible. So you've got to consider stuff like this.
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, the teams do this same kind of process. They have way more information and resources and time and have people who can watch these prospects and go see them in person each weekend and all this stuff. We don't have that kind of time. We don't have the kind of resources, but we do our best, right? And the whole point is to try and get as complete of a picture about these prospects as we possibly can. And so that was ultimately the goal here tonight, to give you guys a more complete picture. Next week, we'll have the more positive side, more safer side. So that should be a fun one as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Kevin pointing out, we could have talked about Tavondre Sweat. I feel like we've done that a few times, though. Mm-hmm. Like he is a one-of-one size profile.
Yeah.
But this was, I guess he could kind of be risky in that sense, too. But we talked about him briefly earlier about the Boomer Bust tape as well.
Yeah, definitely. I tried to not repeat, except for Blake Corum. Sorry, man. I swear I don't hate the guy.
But also we're trying.
really tried, dude. There was a positive graph today from Arjun. But yeah.
Woo-hoo. All right. Well, yeah. Hopefully you guys enjoyed that video. We certainly enjoyed making it. As always, make sure like, subscribe, comment. We always appreciate interacting with you guys on YouTube as well as social media. So be sure and do everything you can there. It does really help continue to grow the show. That's going to do it for us tonight. We'll be back here on a Thursday evening. We'll see you then. As always, bolt up.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.